Is any further discussion? Is there any objection to these dash four amendments? So, okay, is that the extent of the amendments?
That's the extent of the amendments, although I want to bring your attention to the page 10, the as, that I suggested on line 28 instead of A, and then on page 11, line 41, where it says payable, the sub would like to put if elected under.
Could you state that for the record now, Max?
On page 11, line 41, it says plus the monthly amount payable, and we want plus the monthly amount if elected under that. It's an election.
Because they have an option, Mr. Chairman.
They have an option.
As to whether to take the annual lump sum.
No, I'm not talking about the policy.
Take out payable and put
delete,
in.
Delete, or we'll be deleting.
Delete payable.
Okay.
Insert if elected.
That's what
Pardon
I was looking
me.
There we go.
Okay. Representative Witte moves it on page 10, line 28. The printing error, A should say as such monthly payments. Add an S after A, as. And on page 11, line 41, delete payable and insert if elected. Any discussion? Any objection to that? So ordered. Okay.
Jared, move the bill as amended.
Okay, where's this going, Max?
This goes to, has a subsequent.
While I was out, did we get rid of that section 7?
Yes, we did. Well, we took the amendments. The first that proposed, we're back to.
Which took care of that section, subsection 7 then.
Right. We're back the new language, was deleted.
Okay.
Does this have a subsequent referral?
Yes, it does.
Okay, the motion, Representative Dominey, moves House Bill 2049 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with the due pass recommendation.
Mr. Harris, Representative Dominey? I was just looking at this. It doesn't show any impact. I was just.
Well.
It does. What happened?
I don't do the referrals in the office downstairs. There can't be very much fiscal impact.
Well, there, Mr. Chairman, if I can, I think the volunteer fireman thing that we put back in as was and no change was the reason for that. Because, see, what that did, Mr. Chairman, if we change that to the printed, to the bold language, which we didn't
there
do,
was a substantial.
Then there was a substantial fiscal impact. What,
okay.
And we since we put it back the way it is, I don't think there is, Mr. Chairman, but I could be wrong.
Mr. Chair, can we?
Aren't all the decisions made in Ways and Means?
Can we make a motion to remove the Ways and Means and
We've done that in the past in the committee. I'm concerned about one thing, and I want to ask Representative Witte this, because you've been in discussions with the executive branch, and they are here. Do they want the PERS bills in Ways and Means? Is there a reason for that, or should we just can we just send this to the
floor? All right, Mr. Chairman. Before the session even started, I had a discussion with the executive department. And they want those bills, which have an impact on the employer's share paying the system into Ways and Means, so they can add them all up and see what the total impact is. And of course, right now, as you know, we're waiting for the Attorney General's opinion on the Michigan case, and that's the horse that pulls the cart. So all that stuff, the rest of these bills, any impact bill on the employer's share is going to be stacked down in Ways and Means until we get that special committee's report.
Okay, I'll tell you what I want to do. Let's send this to Ways and Means so they're all in one place.
Fine.
Okay. And then the
Ways maybe somebody else can carry it down there, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman?
I know the speaker had told me she didn't want them floating all over the building, but
That's what I was, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Representative.
I was wondering whether or not they wanted us to have two stacks, the stack that went to Ways and Means with fiscal impact, the others that just changed policy with no discernible significant fiscal impact that we just sent through the floor. They don't want to separate.
Well, I don't know if this doesn't have any, I can tell you that. There's nothing in here that goes to Ways and Means.
Well,
Can we send it to Ways and Means with a note that there probably is no fiscal impact, and therefore perhaps they could pass it on quickly?
That's exactly what would happen in Ways and Means.
Okay.
Okay. Any further discussion? Call the roll.
Representative Edwards.
Aye.
Representative Johnson.
Aye.
Representative Manick.
Aye.
Representative Waldo.
Aye.
Representative Whitney.
Aye.
Representative Durkart.
Aye.
Representative Dominey.
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 20. Representative Hayden, would you care to vote on House Bill 2049?
Votes aye.
Votes aye. House Bill 2049 is sent to committee on Ways and Means with due pass recommendation. Okay, go back. Max, you've
2569.
Got your amendments there.
Now, for those of you who didn't have amendments on 2569, you have yours?
One.
The dash one.
That's what I got. Only one we had. I got two of them.
Two dash ones.
Yeah, they're all the same.
You're lucky.
You have yours. You probably have yours.
I got mine, thanks.
Dash one, you have yours. You have yours, but you didn't.
I need one, Max. Max,
go ahead.
This bill, 2569, has been called the work for which qualified. This bill, as it's laid out in on page one, defines on lines 26 to 28, work for which qualified in respect to police officer or firefighter means the duty performed by the police officer or firefighter at the time of disabling injury or exposure to disabling disease. The rest of the bill, then, responding to that definition, would allow one of those people, police officer or firefighter, the people under that definition, to get a disability from the public employee's retirement system if they could not come back to work for which qualified. So it really means the duty performed by the police officer or the firefighter at the time of the disabling injury. So that if the police officer couldn't come back or the firefighter could not come back to that job, he could qualify for a disability from PERS. The bill goes on to say if he is re-employed by the entity under PERS at a job other than which he's qualified, he can be, and the amount of his salary from that job will be subtracted from his disability. There is a section on page 2, lines 43 and 44, and then lines 1 through 8 that were more than discomforting to the subcommittee because they entail the PERS board having to make a decision whether or not that person had refused suitable work and actually deciding what an offer of suitable work was and whether or not there was any subterfuges to suitable work on the part of the agency. We have prepared an amendment, and the subcommittee passed it to take that section out of there.
Is that the dash one?
The dash one amendments will take lines 43 and 44 on page 2 and lines 1 through 8 in page 3 out.
Testimony, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Representative Woody.
Testimony on that section, subsection 3 of section 2, was that the board had to make decisions on what is suitable work, what is subterfuge, and what is otherwise qualified and whatever. And the testimony from the board, from was that they just didn't have the ability to do that. That there was no way that they could come up with, the board is not the type of body that is able to make those kinds of decisions, Mr. Chairman. And they just didn't feel comfortable in being able to do those, that kind of thing. Is that right, Max?
That's correct.
And we couldn't find anybody else that was maybe had the ability to do that, so we just pulled it out of there.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Durfler.
Then is that concern not answered in the bill?
What concern?
Yeah, I'm unclear of your question, too, Representative. What concern specifically?
Well, if this was a concern that the board didn't have the ability to make that determination, it must have been a concern, and they didn't want to have to make that choice, and no one's going to make the choice, and the concern that we had to start with is not answered in the bill. Is that?
Mr. Chairman, it's just the process was so unwieldy that we figured that the determination of work for which qualified meant a job or a similar job at the same pay was sufficient enough for a judgment to be made without going through determining if there was a subterfuge or all that, whatever that is in that subsection there. I guess we felt that the definition work for which qualified meant a return to the same job or a job that's very similar within the same pay category.
Yeah.
That's what it amounted to.
There was, Mr. Chairman, there was concern expressed basically that this part of the bill would have created, in effect, another workers' comp appeal system. I mean, that was certainly my feeling trying to figure out which is which and whether there's a subterfuge involved and type of work, you were going to end up with referees and appeals and everything else and litigation. And none of us on the subcommittee wanted to help in the birthing process of that kind of review.
Matter of fact, we adjourned, or after we got to that part of the bill, we adjourned the subcommittee and went home the first time we heard the bill.
So it was a consensus of the subcommittee to delete this language. Mm-hmm. That's what I wanted to get to.
Now, it turned out to be the consensus of everybody, Mr.
Including, Chairman. That's a good point to be made then.
I might point out, if I may, Mr.
Except
Chairman.
Except the executive department, Mr. Chairman.
No.
Excuse me. No.
This bill did come out of subcommittee on a split vote.
Yeah.
That's 2-1 vote.
So that's correct. Okay.
Mr. Chair,
Representative,
just to make it clear, it was the executive department wanted the language taken out. The Colleen didn't want it taken out from the. So that's one of those. She felt that there was a need, and maybe she could come up and give her position. But that was the only opposition.
Yeah, to be even clearer, it was the PERS system that wanted the language out. As far as trying to decide what a suitable work was.
So, have the
Representative
have the concerns of the PERS system been met or not met?
Mm-hmm. They have been met by deleting the language.
By deleting the language.
For that portion of the bill.
Thank you.
I don't know that they signed off on the entire bill.
Chairman,
Representative Whitty.
The subcommittee had no problem unanimously with getting rid of that section after the testimony.
That's correct. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2569 to Ways and Means.
Would you
do pass recommendation? We didn't do the amendment yet. Okay,
no,
we better move the amendment
first.
We have to
move the -1 amendment.
Okay, I will move the -1 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Representative Domini moves the -1 amendments.
Is that fiscal?
Yes.
Great.
Discussion.
I guess the one thing that's been left out of this is, what in the world is the policy issue here? I mean, it looks like we're providing some kind of a benefit program that has multiple layers and the opportunity to make more money than they made when they were working, and a few other things in this bill. And I guess it looks to me like we are saying if we we're giving police and fire a special benefit beyond those that they currently have, which are very, very favorable. And I guess I'm troubled by this kind of thing. Pretty soon we'll have policemen and firemen who, after becoming permanent employees, basically, when they want out, they won't have to work.
Mr. Chairman,
maybe I'm overstating this, but I'm troubled by what I see, and that the policy issues don't make sense. There's no absolute guarantee in life that you have an absolute right to an income or anything else, and that's what we're doing with this bill.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Woody,
testimony was, well, first of all, the bill does not allow them to make more money than they were making previously. But what it does say is if they return into a job, a public employee retirement, a public employee job that is at less than they were getting when they were injured, then they're allowed to get disability benefits to add to whatever their salary is in their new job to bring it up to the position that they held previously. So if they're making, to make it simple, $2,000 a month in their previous job and they're injured as a firefighter or policeman, they're shot or they fall off the roof or whatever happens, or through the roof, this just happened here last week when six of them went down through the roof in one building, not in Oregon, but it allows them then to, since they aren't able to go up on the roof or able to be a policeman in a regular sense, they can go back to a job with a department or with another public employer and receive less pay, and that the difference between the pay in the new job and the pay that they were receiving formerly would be paid in the form of a disability payment. Now, that's what it says. With the testimony in the committee gave life expectancy on these people at about age 57, I think, in the case of firefighters. So I think it was my feeling as chairman, initially I wasn't too enamored with the bill, but it was my feeling as chairman that, you know, fine, they have retirement benefits that are better than the average public employee because they get a 2.0 instead of a 1.67 and they get 5 years earlier retirement. But with the stress on those kinds of jobs and the resulting life expectancy and the longevity of what they're going to get in the way of retirement when they do retire, we felt that they deserve special treatment, Mr. Chairman, or at least I did. And
Mr. Chairman, so
Representative Walton, that's where I was.
If I could present the other, a little different view.
Appreciate that.
And that is, my understanding of the disability under PERS, as it was originally created, was if the individual was so injured that they could never go back to any other job, then they could begin collecting their retirement in the form of a disability. Mm-hmm. What this does is modify that to say that even if they can go back to work on another job, they can still begin collecting their PERS as a disability award. In effect, you're creating a stepchild worker comp system, because the injured worker can still qualify for workers' comp disability and qualify and receive benefits under this new program that we're establishing. So if they're injured on the job and are police or fire, they can begin collecting this disability under PERS. It triggers as if, Max, correct me if I'm wrong, or Sam, but my understanding is this triggers as if they had worked the full number of years, doesn't it?
If they're vested and been in the system long enough.
So it takes them clear out. If they've been in the 10 years or whatever the exact number is, it treats them as if they had worked till they retired, brings that back and starts the disability.
As far as disability purposes.
Right.
Is so, there an offset of the benefits?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is there an offset?
Exactly, Mr. Chairman, what it is.
I hope the committee's not getting confused as far as PERS retirement versus PERS disability. Two separate issues here. They're different.
Mr. Chairman, does this provision then make the, Representative Whitty, does this provision then make the person whole as far as maintaining 100% of their salary that they were making when they were
right.
Now, Mr.
Exactly.
Chairman, a further mm-hmm. question.
Go ahead.
In other branches of, in other branches that we deal with, isn't there a provision that a worker is entitled to get at least 80%, that if they get at least 80% of the salary that they were making when they go back to work, don't we have that provision?
In that workers'
that's workers' comp, that's, within 20% of the wage
that's
rate.
For vocational rehab
term, yeah.
Eligibility for getting voc rehab, not
yeah.
That's not a disability.
Do we want any kind of consistency here?
Two totally separate. The 80% for voc rehab is just a test as to whether or not you're eligible for voc ed training. It has little to do with.
But if you are hurt under voc ed and you go back to work, if you can get a job within 80%, if you're getting 81% of what you used to get, then you don't get any special disability or training.
You don't, not disability. You've already got that.
You don't get any.
You don't. You're not eligible for voc rehab training.
But you don't get a supplement.
Unless
the
insurer.
You don't get a supplement to make your salary up to 100%.
But nothing to do with salary.
But this bill would bring your salary up to 100%.
Right, Representative Johnson.
I guess I'd like our counsel to detail where this offset is structured in the statutes, because the information is out there that says that there is no offset. In this process, that the benefits of disability benefits under workers' comp would be added to, could be added to, or the reverse, workers' comp disability payments would be added to. You could add this to that, and the substance being that they could make more money than they currently do. If they had been return to work, and I want to clearly understood that, and I want to be seeing where, in fact, that happens.
Okay.
Where's the offset?
This bill, the offset is in page 3.
Yeah.
Lines 29-35. But now, I want you to understand that this offset has to do with the disability, the PERS disability, and the salary that the man would, or the person would be getting back under on the job. And that's what this offset has to deal with. This doesn't dovetail and does not offset workers' comp. So if your scenario that this person could receive a disability, and I guess in some cases may receive a time loss,
okay,
I think that could happen.
But is that appropriate? I don't think.
Well, I don't make that policy decision.
I know you, but that's raised the issue. That's where it's
now, I suppose that could happen if, well, maybe the workers' comp would want to respond as to what an insurance company under workers' comp might be doing in that position.
Safe Corporation would.
Representative Johnson, I'm not following.
Here's where we're getting.
We're talking about workers' comp and this disability and offsetting the two. And I'm not sure what is there to offset. The person's hurt. But that's an award unless there was a permanent total disability. But then the person's not going to be working at all and is eligible anyway. Let's say Mannix.
I would like to analogize this to the private sector. In the private sector, many employees have disability income plans. They also may be covered by workers' comp if they're injured on the job. In my 14 years of experience, I have never seen a disability income plan that makes a difference as to whether it kicks in or not, as to mm-hmm. whether or not workers' comp benefits are provided. They've set up, the plan is paid for by the employer, it's set up totally separate from workers' comp. And workers' comp is handled under extensive state regulation, whereas most of these disability income plans are not very heavily regulated. Most of them have a waiting period of 90 days. That's regardless of whether it's industrial. Most of them also say it's regardless of whether it's industrial or non-industrial. Sometimes they have better benefits if it's industrial. There's a whole host of plans out there that employers can purchase, pay for monthly for their employees, or people can buy for themselves. I understand what Representative Johnson is talking about in the sense that we're looking at the government as an entity here, but really you have two separate sources of funds. One is the workers' compensation system, which is either Safe Corporation, which really acts like a private insurer now, or supposed to, or some private insurance company, or a self-insured employer. They have accountability under our workers' comp laws. You have a separate fund, which is this disability fund, which is funded under a separate schedule. And if anything, I really want to keep the two from ever being intertwined. If you start intertwining them, for instance, I could tell you, boy, you want to restrict workers' comp benefits in Oregon, start applying the standard of disability in here in terms of what an injury is. Bodily injury causing a disability directly and independently of all other causes and affected solely through accidental means. If we did that, I'm just saying, if you start to intertwine the two, you head down that path, then you might as well set up a package system for all disabilities for public employees. That's a whole new can of worms.
Yep.
It makes metaphors.
Representative Hayden.
Mr. Chairman, I beg to differ with my esteemed colleague. In my very limited insurance experience, I find it very common that when you buy a disability income policy, it will very often be a policy that says, we will exclude any Social Security payments you may receive. We will deduct any workers' compensation payments that you may receive. This is a very common provision. You can certainly buy disability income plans that will not exclude them, but you pay more for the premium. They take that into account when they figure the statistics. Am I correct?
I guess the only ones I've had to deal with. Yes, I assume that there are plans out there that are available that do that. I never run into them because I never deal with that side of it. I only would have to deal with it if they definitely overlapped.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Woody.
The only one I ran into was a local disability plan from School District 9, and my wife is receiving both PERS disability and Social Security disability, and that didn't reduce that local at all. So there's one case with Washington National Life Insurance Company that there was no reduction. I don't know about any others.
Yeah, I my own comment.
It can be either way. You can buy either plan.
I really think it's to try and say workers' comp and then this disability somehow merge, I think is one. I'm not even sure if it's applicable. Secondly, I share Representative Manning's concern about trying to interface the two could do harm to both. Because currently you can do this. When you're hurt at work, you're going to get time loss benefits. You may get an award. You may get the disability. You may get Social Security, too. You have to be careful.
I think the basic policy question, though, is right now under PERS, my understanding is that you don't get disability unless you cannot work at any other job. So what we're doing is opening another crack in the PERS bucket and creating another new program, in a sense. And I'm certain in just a few months here that next session, everybody's going to want to be part of this new program, just as we deal with scads of bills to put everybody under PNF. And that's my concern. I want to maintain the integrity of that fund for the people who are in the system. I'm concerned every time we open a new spigot that we're long-term, long-range, we're going to cause some problems. Short-term, probably not.
Chairman?
Representative Durf.
I share that concern with the representative from Hood River that we don't know where we're going to end up with PERS under the clod we're in, and I would really question we'd want to open it up to have more benefits paid out until we really know where we're going.
Representative Woody?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think it has anything to do with preserving the integrity of any fund within the PERS system. I think what we're doing here is we're adding a bill to that stack that we just talked about a little while ago that's going to deal with the employer's rate. And I agree with both the previous two speakers especially I guess Representative Durfler mentioned it, that the Michigan decision is going to be, the horse that pulls the cart. And if we pass this bill will go in the stack with employer share increases, and will be treated along with all those other bills, 30 and out that we passed out of this committee, and other bills of that type that are coming up before us. And that's exactly what we're going to do. And the fund, the system as it now exists, nothing in that system that I know of will be impacted by this, other than, you know, the employer's share will be increased to make up for whatever the fiscal impact of this bill is, I assume.
Mr. Chairman,
local government. Yes.
If I could make just one point following up on that, and that's just the distinction of who pays the employer's share, and that's the taxpayer. This does have an impact back on the local governments.
No argument.
And I've got people in my district that are paying $50 a thousand on property taxes. Now, this isn't going to necessarily make them pay 55, but, you know, everything we do adds to that cost.
That's why there is a fiscal impact and why it will go to the Ways and Means Committee.
If
many of these bills do. Representative Heaton.
It will go to Ways and Means.
It does not have a subsequent.
So if there is a movement to move the bill out and you are saying it's going to go to Ways and Means, you will have to move it and to be referred to Ways and Means.
I don't do the references
in the office down there.
We've had a problem.
Mr. Chair, you believe this belongs in Ways and Means, don't you?
It's my opinion.
Well, I'm sure it does, Mr. Chairman.
Well, Mr. Chair, we've voted on the Dash 1 amendment.
No, we have not. We're debating the Dash 1 amendment.
Well, it seemed like to me we went past the Dash 1.
Well...